Hello there, this is Terrible Tommy back in the bunker, back in the Robert J. Matthews Memorial Bunker right here in North Central Indiana. That's right, where it's a beautiful day here with the sun shining, temperatures starting to rise, supposed to get up 50 degrees by the Monday. Oh boy, get out my thong, baby. My good old brother Bill Clinton go with me down the creek. Okay, here we go. It is the 7th of March, 2014, and we're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And that's where you send your donations for the radio show, and your March donations are due, and any other donations. And, of course, we still are sending funds out to deserving inmates that are in the gulag, which is something I don't think hardly anybody that even espouses to be a white soldier is doing. There's no reason why people couldn't send $5 once in a while at least. And then you want guys to go out and put their life on the line and for you and your race. And when they get locked up, you don't want to even send them stamps or postage or little money for the commissary. You know, like I said, poor old George Loeb down there in Florida. Florida prisons are terrible. They're all terrible, but Florida's really bad. That they have now said that the inmates have to buy all their own stuff. I mean, you know, like clothes. And they wear out their shoes. Of course, the prisons have a sweetheart deal with some China company, and they sell them shoes at an exorbitant rate that fall apart, and pretty soon the guys in prison are walking around barefooted, believe it or not. So come on out there, loosen up a little bit. Don't send your money to all these grand poopahs in the right wing that need to have their living taken care of and their gambling debts and all that stuff. Send it to the guys who've paid the price. How about that? And like I said yesterday, or day before, we just sent out $125 worth. What we do is we get a little pocket of money here. We try to take $25 at a time to send inmates. And, boy, I'm telling you, they're really appreciative, I'll tell you that. Well, you know, when I was a kid around here, only about a block from where I am now, but they tore our old house down, and my parents built a newer house. Small, but it's comfortable. I don't like a big house. You got too much to keep clean, and you fill up all the rooms with junk and a whole bit. Yeah, this place I'm at is just exactly what I like. Yeah. Well, anyhow, as I've told you many times, there weren't any blacks around here. Maybe one family in town. I think there was one kid in high school during the whole time, and so, you know, we didn't think about blacks at all. We were out having fun doing our thing. We didn't think about blacks. I didn't have any blacks to play with and all that kind of stuff. Hell no. But I'll tell you what, every Saturday night about 7 o'clock, we celebrated Black History Time. Yeah, Black History Time. And you're probably shocked, but I'll tell you what, I'm going to play a recording I've got of that Black History celebration that we used to do on Saturday night about 8 o'clock. So get ready, here we go.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Amos. I just want to tell you about something that happened to my friends Andy and the Kingfish. Andy found a nickel in an old trunk. It was dated 1877. So Andy wrote a letter to Mr. Wilton, a rare coin dealer, and right now Mr. Wilton is answering Andy's letter.
Andrew H. Brown, care of the Mystic Knights of the Sea Lodge Hall. Dear Mr. Brown, in reply to your recent letter requesting the value of an 1877 5-cent piece, the current market of this coin is $250. If you care to bring the coin in, we will be happy to pay you this amount. I hope our offer meets with your approval. Yours very truly.
Is that all, Mr. Wilson?
Yes. And I hope this Andrew Brown accepts our offer. I'd like to add this coin to our collection. Get the letter right off.
Yes, sir.
Good morning, Kingfish.
Well, good morning, Joe. How about old Pale the Mealman this morning? Any mail?
Just one letter, Kingfish. It's for Andy Brown.
I'll see the boy later at the food hall. I'll give it to him. Well, I guess I better be getting home now and see if the Battle Axe got any lunch for me. See you later, old pal.
That you, George?
Yes, if I just me. Lunch ready? I just come from... Honey, thought I told you not to come out in that rig till I got something in my stomach.
You just keep your big mouth shut. What's that letter you got there?
A letter for Andy. From a rare coin dealer. Maybe I better open the letter and see what they're writing the boy about.
George Stevens, you ain't thinking about tampering with the mails, is you?
Now, wait a minute. Let's think of this thing. You know I pay taxes. It's my government.
What about?
Well, if it's my government, it's my post office. And if it's my post office, there ain't no harm in a fellow opening his own mail, is there? Mr. Andy Brown says 1877. Holy mackerel! Andy has got a nickel worth $250.
George Stevens, it was bad enough opening Andy's letter. You ain't thinking about jipping him out of that coin, is you?
Who, me? Innocent Stevens? I see how he is.
Well, you just better not, because I ain't going to stand for no more trouble around here. You understand that? And if you start jipping Andy or anybody else, I'm going to break every bone in your body.
Well, Henry Van Poulter.
Hello, Kingfish.
Have a seat there, Henry.
Charming to see you. Simply charming.
Yeah, it is charming.
I dropped Mrs. Van Porter at the beauty parlor and came right over as soon as I could. Now, what's this I hear about Andy having a nickel worth $250?
That's right, Henry. I accidentally found out about it. Now all I gotta do is figure out a way to get it away from him.
Well, knowing you, Kingfish, that should be a minor operation.
I know the boy got the nickel on him someplace, but how I going to get his pants off so I can go through his pockets?
Well, let me see. A man takes his pants off when he goes to sleep. Or when he goes to the doctor.
Wait a minute. Doctor. That's it, Henry. Doctor. See, I got a lot of doctor equipment that I got when the drugstore up the street burned down. Yeah, Dr. George Stevens. Henry, I think I was about to preform a nickelectomy.
Kingfish, I've been expecting a letter that was supposed to,
Excuse me, Andy, can't you see I've taken a blood count here? 3, add 4, subtract 2. That's the most anemic blood I ever did see. Well, Andy, old pal, it's good seeing you. Excuse the rubber glove, I just come from a big operation.
Kingfish. Huh? You mean to say that you is an actual doctor?
Well, I ain't been blabbing it around, but I've been taking a correspondence course in doctoring from that big medical school down there in Baltimore, John Vanville.
Oh, I didn't hear about that place, yeah. what's the matter?
But wait a minute here.
Kingfish, is you uh-huhing good or uh-huhing bad?
Well, in between. Better take another look here. I see you are suffering from a slight inflagration of the optimistic nerve there.
Oh, me.
Now, I don't want to worry you or frighten you, nothing like that. But if you got any reading to do,
You better do it within the next 2 weeks.
2 weeks? Mm-hmm. Can't you, Doctor? What must I do?
Well, I can't tell until I look into it a little deeper.
Deeper? How deep is you got to look?
Pretty deep. Take off your pants.
Wait a minute, Kingfish. If this trouble's with my eyes, how come I got to take my pants off?
That's a secret of obstetricity. So don't argue with the obstetricator. Yeah, put that on. And hurry up, too, because I got a full schedule of doctor in here. So I think I'm going to have to squeeze you in between an appendicitis and loose liver.
Is you done located the trouble with my eyes yet, Kingfish?
It ain't in your adenoids. Turn around. Well, better take a look in this ear here.
Sure is dark in there.
Wait a minute till I get my flashlight here. Hey, Andy, you hold this there while I run around looking the other side. Any light coming through all right?
Good, good.
Yeah, well, Andy, I see the trouble now. It's with your eyes, all right.
What you mean with my eyes?
Well, after giving you thorough examination, I find that the root of your trouble is eye strain. Yeah, my boy, you done strained your eyes.
Yeah. I know I ain't been seen the way I oughta. You oughta see some of the gals I've been whistling at lately.
Andy, I prescribe that you give your eyes complete rest. Yeah, you gotta rest them at least an hour each day.
Yeah, but ain't it kind of hard to rest your eyes without resting the rest of you?
No, son. Medical science done found out a way to overcome that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You got to shut out the light completely. Mm. Yeah, you got to shut out all the light. All the light. Don't want you to see nothing. Now, sit down. Not there, Andy. Not there. Here's the chair over here. Now, you sit right here. Sit down there on the chair. Now, just sit down. Yeah, everything gonna be all right. Now, just...
Can you see anything? I can't see nothing. Hey, Kingfish, where is you? I was scared.
Now, wait a minute. Now, sit down with you, Andy. Sit down. Now, sit down there now. Now, just sit there and relax. Everything gonna be all right.
Kingfish, hold my hand.
Hold your hand?
Yeah, hold my hand. If you don't hold my hand this second, I'm going to take this bandage right off.
Don't do that. Don't do that. Here my hand. Now, just hang right on to it there. Hang right on to it.
That's better. Well, I'm sure is cold.
That's because I've been having chills here lately.
Kingfish, I know you is here, but it sounds like your voice is coming to the other side of the room.
It just sounds like that way, Andy. The acoustic. I stand right here alongside you.
Oh, good boy. Good boy. You know, Kingfish, you was a real pal to stay so close to me when I was scared like this. Yeah, you sure is.
Mister, where's your telephone?
Right back there.
I thank you. Hello, Mr. Wilton. Look, I got that letter about the 1877 nickel. Yeah. And I got the nickel right here in my pocket. And, Holy smoke! I done dropped a ram nickel in the telephone.
Well, that's the end of our Black History celebration for this week. I think we're going to, every Friday maybe, we'll put on a little bit more black history, according to Terrible Tommy here in the bunker. Yeah, right. Yeah, the old, used to sit around the fireplace on the, actually not a fireplace, actually, just an old wood stove, coal-burning stove on Saturday night. And we got that black history every week, and boy, did that make us happy. Now, you know, I was telling you about this NFL problem that they come up with. I'm telling you, this is hard to believe, but I said something about it yesterday or the day before. They came up with this deal to where anybody caught on the field saying the N-word, or maybe even in the bleachers saying the N-word at football game or National Football League, they would penalize the team that it came from 15 yards. Now, you realize what this is going to cause? If they ever want to see riots at a football game, because the people up in the audience in the bleachers, they won't really know what happened. All of a sudden, their favorite team is behind, and all of a sudden they start stepping off a 15-yard penalty. Can you imagine what a bunch of drunk white guys are going to do? Yeah, well, anyhow, here we go. ESPN host Michael Wilbon is so against the NFL's consideration of a penalty for using the N-word on the field that he used the term on the air to drive a point during the network show highlighting the common use of the N-word. The league's competition committee has already discussed the new rule, which would penalize teams 15 yards for the first offense and result in a player being ejected for the second infraction for saying nigger on the field. And it is expected to be voted on by the team owners late March. Well, I wonder if the guy says just N-word, whether that counts as nigger. I don't know. They didn't make that clear yet. Oh, here we go. The Reverend Al Sharpton, in a special column for the New York Daily News. I've told you before, I debated this guy, and he's dumb as a rock. But they got him on MSNBC. Acting like he's some great pontificator of the Negroids. Well, anyhow, he says he sees the rule as a good first step, but believes the penalties need to be harsher. More like 50 yards penalty. Yeah. It ought to be immediate termination, with the player having the right to all due process, unquote. He wrote, quote, if we don't take an unequivocal stand on the N-word, what happens when the openly homosexual athletes are mocked with the F-word? F-word, wait a minute. F-word. What the hell is F-word? On the field, or players use anti-Jew or anti-Irish words. Well, most Irish I know, they'd love it because it gave them a good excuse to have a boxing match. they wouldn't worry about it. They'd take care of it in other ways. But anti-Jew? How many National Football League players do you know that are Jews? Not that there never has been, but I don't think you're going to find many. We must send a message that all derogatory words are unacceptable and will face maximum penalty. That's what the Right Reverend Al Sharpton says. Quote, an excuse is unacceptable, unquote. Wilbon, however, does see an excuse. During an episode of his show, Pardon the Interruption, Wilbon initially expressed his massive problem with the plan. Quote, so you're going to have a league with no black owners and a white commissioner, middle-aged and advanced-age white men say to black players, mostly because it's what we're talking about, you black players can't use the word nigger on this field of play, or we're going to penalize you, unquote. Who uses nigger more than niggers? N-word, I mean. I've got a massive problem with that. I don't think it's going to happen. I know there are black men of the same age, John Wooten being one of them, who say, quote, no, you've got to take this word out of the workplace. I understand, but I don't want it enforced like this, he says. Well, he followed that up by appearing on Outside the Lines, another ESPN show, niggerball show. And he's quoted as saying, I had somebody call me after we got into this discussion on PTI. And I had many somebodies, public figures, professional athletes, politicians, religious leaders, Christ Insanity people, call me, and they would say, and I'm going to say exactly what was said to me. My nigger. Wait a minute. I'm glad you said this. I'm glad you have the position. And they texted, and they wrote it, or spoke it on voicemail. Quote, and it was absolutely endearing and is powerful. It is entirely to me about who uses it. Though a few people agreed with Wilbon's position, many took a Twitter questioning his position. Well, let's see here. Here's some of the comments. And, you know, the white comments are just as dumb as the blacks. Just because Michael Wilbon says he uses the N-word, the nigger word, makes it more accepting. It's a double standard. No shit. Double standards in this country? You mean like invading and killing hundreds of thousands of Iraqis and Afghanistan people and spreading nuclear waste all over the Mideast? But we got to treat... go in and allegedly save or occupy the Ukraine. Ooh, double standard. Here's another guy. I can't believe or respect a person who claims he's offended by a word he uses every day, all day. If it's wrong, it's wrong. That was from a white guy. You might figure that. Here's another guy. He says, Mike Wilbon doesn't think the N-word should be penalized, and also uses it on live TV, but in the same breath says Redskins should change the name. Well, I think they should call them the Mongolskins, because they're not Indians. And I haven't really seen any Redskins. They all look brown to me, except the blonde-haired, blue-eyed type Indians that run the tribe in the casino, and their Jewish buddies. Yeah, right, the Redskins. Okay, so that's the end of the comment on that. So that's going to be a big deal from here on out. They're either going to not use the N-word at all, or we're going to use it every time we say anything about the black people. Cool. That brings me around to another comment I wanted to make. And I've got some friends over in the... they're all interested in the Middle East and Eastern Europe and every little thing that happens there. Things that I don't need to know, don't know, and don't care. But they want to go on and on about it, but they've sort of got the idea that if we want to handle the Jews, well, all we have to do is come together with all these non-whites around the world, and we can all gang up on the Jews. I don't think that's going to work. I don't think it's going to work. Because the Jews are such a small percentage of the world population that they can maneuver a lot faster than you. They've got a Chris Kraft power boat, and you got a damn barge. And so, this idea is dangerous, too. Because at a time when the white race is really dropping in numbers on every front, and we're being deluged with people of color from all over the world, I don't think is the best time to spend a bunch of time allying ourselves with people of other races to go after those damn Jews. No, I don't think that's a good idea. I think everybody, if they've got a quarrel or problem with Jews, each group should go after them by themselves, separately. You know, march separately but strike together. That's what Bob Miles used to say. And there's no reason the black race can't. And they do. The black race probably calls out the Jews more stridently than any white person does. And let each racial, ethnic group that's got a problem with the Jew just work from where they're at. But coming together and having a worldwide conference on how we got to hold hands and attack the Jews, I ain't buying it. I ain't buying it. I mentioned yesterday about, I think, Hillary, the bitch Clinton, the whore Clinton, who started out as a right-wing conservative and got together with Saul Alinsky and became a radical progressive, race-mixing progressive, allegedly Jew-loving progressive. She, you know, she comparing the actions of the Russians to Hitler. Now, there's a hell of a lot of difference between when Hitler invaded Poland with the agreement with Stalin, then the Russians just coming in with just a few people to keep an eye on things so that the Crimean people don't get their asses kicked. And I don't think the Russians are planning on staying around once things calm down. But these guys, I'm telling you, do you ever watch this C-SPAN? Yeah. Well, once in a while you ought to tune it in. On my cable it's 104, but it'd be on different channels in different parts of the country. And watch these guys, these bureaucrats, testify about things like the Ukraine. And they're all talking big talk. We got to do this, we got to do that. We got to wrap up their money so they can't get their money out and all that kind of stuff. And these are all pasty-faced, fat sons of bitches and ugly women. Most all Jews. However, a hell of a lot of newcomer American citizens. Now, when a white guy, pasty ass, fat ass, chicken shit, draft dodging white guy is testifying before these equally obnoxious congressmen and senators, sort of look at the view behind them and look at the look on their faces and see who these people are. Well, more and more, it's non-white. These black-eyed, hollow-eyed third worlders are moving up in the ranks and they're taking over the bureaucracy, just like D.C. Wolf said. He said that Washington, D.C. is fastly becoming a third world city. And that's because the third world people are being brought in by our State Department, given a quick citizenship thing and stuff them right into the bureaucracy, and pretty soon you're seeing almost totally non-white people talking about what they're going to do to you and what you're going to have to do. This morning they had a Sikh on there, you know. A Sikh was laying out the program of what we should be doing and what he plans to do, and about that $1 billion that these assholes want to give to the Ukrainians just to buy them off, because that's all they think about in Washington. If you can't buy it off, you bomb them. If you can't buy people off, just kill them, you know. Talk about Murder Incorporated. These guys, they would make Murder Incorporated blush. Yeah. They sure would. But anyhow, that's, you know, next time you listen to this dribble on C-SPAN, which is mostly blah, 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 look behind them, because they got a pretty wide shot. And you're either going to see white, ugly Jewish women or non-whites from all over the world that are now citizens. Yeah, and they're running your government. Yeah, right. Well, let's have a little comment from one of our esteemed associates. I agree with you, T.T. I'm not into the whole support the military, wounded warrior, and cheering for the troops type stuff. I really could care less about those troops. First of all, they all voluntarily enlisted, and most of these enlistments occurred during a period of war. They volunteered to go and fight and kill for this monstrous beast that we call the U.S. government, so I have no sympathy at all for them and could care less about what happens to them. That's all conservative right-wing stuff. And Tommy's going to comment, too. It's all hypocritical crap. All those crocodile tears and our hearts go out to you and all that is bullshit hypocrisy. Anyhow, who want everyone to cheer and support the multiracial military. In fact, some of my greatest contempt is for special forces because these guys not only choose to enlist but then chose again to participate in a rigorous training and selection process so that they could join a unit whose primary purpose is to go into other people's nations and murder them. So why should we feel bad when they in turn meet the same fate as their victims? If there's any in the military that feel sorry for these guys who drive transport trucks, the vehicle mechanics, the cooks, and all these people who are performing non-combat jobs in support and got injured or killed, at least those people weren't going out and murdering people in the country they were occupying. Most of them were just trying to learn a trade for the civilian world, while the combat people were just looking to kill. And don't tell me they don't, because I've known too many guys in the military that took great pleasure in killing. And they were very candid about it. Same way with cops. I've had cop friends. I don't have any cop friends anymore, but at one time I did. And the cop friends that I had, they just couldn't wait till there was a shootout or a chase. Why do you think so many innocent people get killed? These guys, they want to go 80, 90, 100 miles an hour to chase somebody who stole a Twinkie or something, or a minor infraction, and they murder innocent civilians. So these people get their blood lust up, and they're a danger to any civilized society. And now, of course, they come back, and they'll make them cops. They'll make them prison guards. They're going to put them in positions to have more power over you than any regular cop would think of having because they've been used to pushing people around. Why do you think that in the L.A. County Jail, they send their new recruits immediately into the jail to work for several months before they turn them out on the street against you? Well, it's because in the jail they're meeting up with the worst of the worst, and they want to get them all hardened up that way. Well, what do you think they're going to be like when you, after a few months in the county jail in L.A.? Oh, jeez. And then you put them out on the street? It's enough to make a homicidal maniac out of you. And this is why, at least, I support the draft. I mean, if you're going to do this, draft people, especially the rich bastards, they're kids. Take them out of Harvard and send them over there. And all these guys are always promoting war. Let them go first. I don't care if you are fat and pudgy and chicken shit and coward. You're going into the front lines. That would stop all this war fever real fast. You know, the right wing do another thing. The right wing racialists. They're always promoting how wonderful the German military was in World War II. Well, they were very efficient and very efficient killers. But it's been researched lately, and there's even books written on it, that they weren't the gentleman types so much that their friends say they were. Along the way, they were doing all kinds of bad things to the populations and raping and so forth. And so all this myth that these Hitler lovers go by, that the German military was Simon Pure and did not commit atrocities, is just a myth, and it just doesn't hold up with close observation. Anytime you put a guy with the power to kill in the field, and you don't have a real strong chain on him, He's going to do things. There's going to be excesses. One of his buddies gets killed. That gives him the excuse to go out and kill 10 of the other people. Usually people had nothing to do with his buddy getting killed at all. But the main thing to remember is that when you go in and occupy a country, you are the enemy. You are the prime enemy. You invade the United States, you become the enemy. I mean, we got millions of invaded. The only difference is they haven't used a gun, but they're still invaders. They're our enemies. So when people shoot the shit out of you for invading their country and kicking in their door, you get just exactly what you deserve. And don't give me that shit patriotic stuff. I won't stand for that stuff anymore. I don't salute that American flag because it represents the corporate structure of this country and the military-industrial complex, and I won't salute it. So you see, there's a hell of a lot of difference between Terrible Tommy and Lone Wolves and the right wing. There's very little similarities because the right wing and the Klan and all them tend to be super patriots and join up in the military and all that kind of stuff. I remember when I was opposing Ronald Reagan because I knew he was a son of a bitch, and I can prove it, and he was a war criminal. And all the Klan around the country, they were supporting Ronald Reagan, man, you show them how. Ronald Reagan was no brave person. He never served in any action at all. He never left Hollywood. He walked to work. His military service had to do with him walking about one block from his house to where he made propaganda films and stuff like that. So, no way. Anyhow, I was condemned for that. Oh, my God, you're a Klansman. You run the Klan of California. You don't support Ronald Reagan? I said, if you knew what I knew about Ronald Reagan, you wouldn't support him either. Take my word for it. Friends of mine, like I've told you before, in Hollywood, they used to retire and live around where I lived for 40 years. I used to talk to them all the time. I said, Tom, they laughed when we talked about Ronald Reagan because these people worked on the sound stages with Ronald Reagan and these kind of people. And they used to say to Ronald Reagan, the Jew director would say, you see those X's, Ronnie? Yeah. Well, you got to stand on the right X. And he'd get on the wrong X, and those Jew directors would say, God damn it, Reagan, get on the goddamn X. And he dutifully sauntered over there and got right on the X. And throughout the rest of his life, he was taking directions from the Jews. That's one of the big problems with Hollywood. They take people who are nobodies, who are gutless wonders, and have them play a role which they have no similarity to at all in real life. They're having to drug themselves up to even do it because they know they're fakes and cowards. And they make heroes out of them with the people. The people are so stupid to think that these Hollywood actors that do a good job at acting are that way in their own life, when most of them are absolute goddamn cowards of the worst order. And that's how they got so many Jews in power in Hollywood, because many of them were good actors, and they played the part of strong, brave, wonderful guys and all that kind of stuff. And it's all bullshit. So when somebody out there says, what's the difference between Tom Metzger and what he talks about in the rut ring, the white ring? You tell them there's no comparison. I'm not in the right wing, don't want any part of the right wing, and most of my positions are totally 180 degrees out with the right wing. Even on the race issue, the way they go about the race issue is not the way I go about the race issue. So what I get sick of is the press keep lumping me in with the far right, and I'm really nothing to do with the far right. Far right can peddle its own damn canoe, but I'm not in it. And I'm not into the revisionist movement either, because I like to read some things about history and maybe learn some new things about history, but when it becomes a business, I'm out of there. It's like it's a show of business for the Jews and their game. It's It's a money-making deal for a lot of people in revisionism, like Willis Carto and those people. It becomes a business, you know. Or a David Duke, plastic man, living in Europe in comfort and skiing in the Alps and all that shit, while his sucker contributors in the right wing keep him in a lifestyle he likes, man. Okay, but if you're that stupid, you deserve what you get. And you know these books these right-wingers supposedly write, even in the racial struggle? All they do is put a bunch of little notes in a cigar box over a period of time. They hand it to a ghostwriter. He puts together a book. Probably a Jew does it. And then it's sold as a big deal from a right-wing racist leader. And he makes money off of it. Come on. They call me cynical. Well, I've got every reason to be cynical when I look at the shit that's going on around me. This email is funny. This is funny. This guy sends this out to thousands of people who have websites. And if he knew exactly what, if he ever looked at my website, I'm sure he wouldn't be sending me this email. Dear owner of www.resist.com, my name is Mike, and I am an advertising representative of a number of leading online companies. These companies operate in various fields. That includes the gaming industry, something that's ruining thousands of Americans, gambling their money away, and senior citizens gambling their money away, their Social Security. Sports activities, niggerball, international flower delivery, and various leisure activity fields like porn. I was impressed by your internet site, www.resist.com, and would like to discuss the possibility of you hosting advertising space for my clients on your site. We're interested in various options that include textual advertisements and banner space. If you're interested, please contact me and we can discuss all the possibilities in detail. Looking forward to doing business with you. Best regards, Mike Walker, Client Side Acquisition. Go pound sand, buddy. I ain't advertising for any of you corporate people. That'd be just a total reversal the way I believe. And I know a lot of guys are trying to do that on some of these blog talks and stuff like that. I'm not going to say much about it, but it seems to be a little bit hypocritical to be talking about the Jews and the Negroes and invading Mexicans and all that, and then at the same time have your talk and your program surrounded by Jew advertising. I don't see it myself when you could do just like I do and put it together this way, and maybe you don't reach near as many people. In fact, however, I think I do. I think I reach more people in most of these blog talk deals. But and I don't have to wake up in the middle of the night and think, what did you do, Tom? You put a goddamn Jew ad on your racist deal. What the kind of guy are you? No, we don't do that. In fact, we can't even get a MasterCard or a card program. The only thing we've been able to do so far, and we had to fight for that for years, was PayPal. But we've tried to get a deal where we could put cards on, like all the rest of the right-wingers. That they all have them on there. But how come they won't let us do it? Yeah, there's a lot of things that many of these right-wing leaders and so forth get away with that I can't get away with. So, anyhow, at least we got PayPal. This guy that sent this email to me, his email, get this, mike@luckychip-media.net. Lucky Chip, this is primarily one of those outfits for gambling to get people all in debt and lose all their money gambling online. If it was up to me, that Jew place called Las Vegas would be closed down, and the only thing that you could do there is play bingo. It's not that I'm against gambling, but I'm against gambling when people are pissing away their rent and their house payment and their food for their kids and everything like that. That's why I oppose gambling. Plus the fact that when I gamble, I never win. Well, here's somebody that's going to tell me about chemtrails. 80% population reduction of the earth. Well, I don't think that would be too bad myself. Yes, the real purpose of chemtrails is to cull the population. Well, isn't that what racists talk about all the time? Culling the population? Believe me, it needs culled. If you can get through this page, you will have a pretty good idea of what's going on with chemtrails. It's no longer a conspiracy. It's happening. Has been for some time, and it's real. And you wonder why you're sick. Well, I'm not sick. But all these people whining about chemtrails, but none of them have ever crashed the gate of an airport where these planes are taken off at. Or even, as far as I know, they don't even pick at these places. You can track down where these planes are coming from. And if you raise enough hell, you might get something to happen. And if nothing ever happens, well, some people may take the law into their own hands, you know. Let's cut to the chase. Here's an inside source that tells us exactly the real purpose of chemtrail spraying. Hard for many to believe, but this is the truth, folks. HARP, chemtrails, how they are bioengineering. You know, I'm not going to read this stuff because nobody's going to do anything about it. You're going to write about it. You're going to study it. You're going to find out what chemicals they are, and you're going to show pictures of them in the sky. But what are you going to do to stop it? You going to call your congressman? You going to call your mayor? I called the airport here in my hometown a year ago, and I said, do you see those things up there? Yeah. Well, what's that all about? Well, I don't know. Well, what if it's bad for the people? What if we're breathing this stuff in? Well, I don't know. I can't do anything about it. I can't do anything about anything because I'm just a goddamn American citizen who whines and cries about everything, but he never has the balls to grasp his weapon in hand and take care of things. There's people in Washington that know exactly what's going on. These are congressmen and senators, and you should show up at their house and say, God damn it, we want to know what's going on. If you don't tell us right now, we're going to haul you off and hang you from a tree. Yeah. Like the old days. You know, one thing I do like about the French is when they get their ass in an uproar, they go out in the streets and do it. And they don't screw around. The French Revolution was something else, man. We ain't taking this shit no more. Get your head up here in this deal and it's going to get chopped off down in the basket. Yeah. Yeah, but let me explain why. Let me tell you. Plop. So, you know, this is the, I don't know, neocons or right wing or small Republican R and all that, that put out thousands of reams of this shit on the internet, and a lot of it's true as hell, but so what? You know, well, Mike Malloy on his progressive radio show talks about it too. So what? I mean, he talks about the same thing we're talking about. This shit, it can't be, shouldn't be allowed. But what? What? Who's going to do anything? Who's in the streets? Who's banging on the gates of Washington, D.C.? Who's giving the Federal Reserve Building problems and all that? Nobody. It just goes whine, 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 whine. Well, that just causes you to have a nervous breakdown. You need to sit down, have a drink, enjoy yourself a little bit. And when people decide it's enough is enough and they head for the halls of power, whether it's your state house or whether it's a federal house or whether it's the Board of Trade or whatever it is with your pitchfork and your torches, by God, I'll be right there with them at the front. Just let me know, okay? But don't send me this stuff over and over and over. Oh, boy, I got the latest news on they're trying to kill us. Look, the ruling class have been killing the working class for thousands of years. Don't you know that? You know, through wars and starvation and everything that goes along with it. That's the game of the ruling class and the predatory capitalists or the predatory state capitalists or the predatory communist capitalists or whatever. All the ruling class kill you. They do. Especially if you get out of line, because they like life the way they like it. And when you, if you don't resist them, or I don't even like resist anymore. That's why I got rid of white herring resistance. I don't want to resist anymore. I want to be an insurgent. That means I'm 100% opposed to the central government of this particular country. Everybody in other countries got to take care of their own, but I'm talking about this country, this state, wherever, where all the shit's happening. Okay? All right. I'll see if we can find some other stuff to scream about here. Boy. Oh, boy, here we go. It's only the size of a dishwasher and weighs as much as a giant panda. But its inventors are hoping the spacecraft will go where no other Jew vessel has gone before, to the moon. Working on a shoestring budget, yeah, right. The Jew scientists in Israel and engineers building the shuttle, temporarily named Sparrow, believe it will land on the moon by the end of 2015, a feat only the United States, Russia, and China have managed to do so far. Well, of course, where do you think the scientific advanced people came from? These Jews were mixed race or mixed Europeans. Yeah, these were gene hijackers that were involved in Germany and all over Europe. They came in as really pathetic bunch of assholes, picked up genes and got smarter. And so they get out of Israel, and then we send them all the money they need to do whatever they want to do, and including the atomic bombs, of which they're the only ones in the Middle East that have them, but they're the ones that bitch about them all the time. So anyhow, that's I don't know. I think we should start an immediate letter campaign. No kikes on the moon. Hands off the moon, kikes. Get a bumper sticker. Make a bumper sticker up. No kikes on the moon, please. Let's not infect outer space with the Jew bacillus. I can't wait for the Jews to be confronted by some real outer space creature that's might is right kind of creature from some asteroid or some planet way out there, suddenly lands in Israel and take me to your fucking leader. And then disembowel and cut his head off, they wouldn't be infected with all this poor Jew stuff. Poor Jew, poor me, that creature from outer space would just eat him. Well, that's about it for today. If I haven't offended everybody, well, send me a note and tell me what your bitch is, and I'll do my best to offend you tomorrow on Saturn's Day. Because if there's one thing I love to do, is to offend people. 14:05, and I think I'll end up the show today with a song for the ladies, for the she-wolves out there, from Terrible Tommy and Terrible Tommy's Tavern. Now, this song was recorded last evening over at Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern and Steakhouse and Filling Station. We had quite a crowd in there, so we recorded it for your pleasure, all right? Calm down. Quiet. Quiet down here. Quiet down. I go out walking after midnight. After midnight, searching for you. I walk for miles along the highway. Well, that's just my way of saying I love you. I'm always walking after midnight, searching for you. I stop to see a weeping willow crying on his pillow. Maybe he's crying for me. And as the skies turn gloomy, night winds whisper to me, I'm lonesome as I can be. I go out walking after midnight, out in the moonlight, just hoping you may be somewhere out there walking after midnight, searching for me. I stop to see a weeping willow crying on his pillow. Maybe he's crying for me. And as the skies turn gloomy, night winds whisper to me, I'm lonesome as I can be. I go out walking after midnight, out in the moonlight, just hoping you may be somewhere out there walking after midnight and searching for me. Hey, I see you up there. Wait up. Slow down there. Come on. I'll be right there.